You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today. And I'm happy to have with me again Lisa Isom, who is president of Assurance Risk Managers out in Colorado, and happens to be the company and person who manages the NSPS insurance program. Welcome again, Lisa.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Hard to believe.
Pleasure to be here again.
Hard to believe it's been 2 months since we had a show.
I know.
Time just goes so quickly these days, that's for sure. And I guess I'll probably see you in what? Well, it'll be a little while. It'll be in October, I guess, when we hold our fall meetings out in Kansas City. So.
Absolutely.
Probably
Absolutely.
See you then, if not before, but I appreciate you joining me again.
Well, thank you.
And as usual, I'm sure there are lots of cool and interesting things going on in the insurance world. I don't know if there's any breaking news we need to know about. I know from our last show we want to go back and revisit or at least expand a bit on some of the things we began to talk about during the last show, the flood insurance side and professional liability in particular.
Yeah.
But before we get started, I don't know if there's anything out there that's happening that our audience should know about or not.
Well, always, this time of the year are those equipment thefts, and what I would tell you is, since our last show, there have been a couple of incidents that have occurred, and both of which was recovered equipment after the fact, naturally, but just simply because, they made contact with us after they realized the equipment was stolen, and we, kind of put out fillers all over the country and basically found the equipment for the insured. So at the end of the day, they had, replaced the equipment that was stolen, but with the recoverable amount rather than them having to face a replacement cost of, say, $45,000, we could at least subrogate back and make them whole and then not have the stolen equipment reducing their claim amount out so they're, not penalized going forward. So ultimately, what I would tell you is when you're out there and you have a piece of equipment stolen or you have a claim that occurs, contact, your agent, certainly. If we're not the agent, certainly let us know. Give me a call and we'll put out fillers even across the board, from equipment dealers to pawn shops to wherever, and hopefully help you to try to get that equipment picked up. And really, the quicker you notify people, the greater the possibility of recovering it and getting back up and running again. So, that's what I would tell you.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I got back, I was out Thursday afternoon and Friday visiting with family, and when I came in this morning, I'd gotten an email from our buddy Rick Price down in Florida, who keeps track of all the things that are happening in Florida and has for all these years since this plague began with the equipment theft. And he had just gotten one this past week that seemed like, he said, it slowed down a little bit, but now it's picking back up again, apparently. And this particular one was a Trimble R8 in Miami, and actually a rental car, he said, was used in the crime.
Oh, my goodness.
And so they're hoping to be able to maybe track something from that. But, yeah, it's a plague in lots of places, maybe some more so than others, but just another cautionary tale, I guess, that everybody has to try to keep up with.
Yep, absolutely. It's just, some people know what they're getting and others don't. And, if they know what they're getting, it's pretty difficult to find them and get them back. But the ones that really don't know and see it setting and pick it up and try to run to get, some cash for it is basically what goes on. Those seem to be quick. But it's amazing to me at how many times that, a claim will occur, a theft would occur, and you report it, and nobody really does anything about it. It's like, okay, I'm just going to report the claim and I'm going to get a new piece of equipment and get back up and running, or maybe a rental, you know, for the next week and get it up and running. Well, at the end of the day, you don't realize at the time, naturally that's the urgent need, but down the road, the loss history that you're going to be experienced from that theft is certainly worth your while to put out fillers, or who should I contact? When a person calls me, you know, I'll certainly tell them the police department naturally, but within that police department, you're reporting a theft under, you know, one department, and the recovery department is an entirely different one. So it's amazing where oftentimes the, you know, left hand's not talking to the right hand, and your stolen equipment has already been recovered, sets in the same police station that you've reported it in, and no one knows it's yours.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning something like that in one of our previous shows where you'd had a situation where that exact thing happened.
Yes, that's exactly right. And this other, that's been probably 5-10 years ago that occurred, and we actually recovered it here in Colorado. But this particular one just occurred, and it was in Washington, and similar situation occurred. Smaller value, but the same situation occurred. So here it was in their, recoverable department, and no one realized it was the same piece of equipment that had been reported in the same department stolen.
Right. So if I'm understanding correctly, the lesson here is related to following up because of the loss history that if I'm understanding what that means, that's something that's in your record with the with your insurance carrier.
That's correct.
If you have a loss history, then that's going to impact either coverage or cost or whatever down the road. So I guess if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying you need to try to be as diligent as possible to continue to follow up to recover, because if you don't, then that loss history hangs there and it might be sitting in the police department somewhere.
It certainly could, and unfortunately, you know, in this situation, just say, for example, you have a piece of stolen equipment for $45,000. The insurance carrier is going to pay to replace that cost, but if you have your equipment that's recovered, it's no longer yours. Once a check's been cut for the insurance company, you know, the recoverable piece of equipment will go back to the insurance company, or, you know, to sell it off to compensate for it. So instead of having a loss of $45,000 on your loss history, which may make you uninsurable, or your cost of insurance go up over the years, at the end of the day, if you sell it off for $25,000 or the insurance company does, then you're only going to be dealing with the balance thereof hitting your loss ratio.
Right. So that's the key then, isn't it?
That is the key.
Whatever you can do or can occur to lessen that, whatever that loss is, for future consideration in insurability or cost of insurance.
That's right.
That's good news. And having not been subject to that, that wasn't something that had really occurred to me. But I mean, it makes perfect sense. I just hadn't really focused on it before. So I guess that's probably true for most of us. We don't think about those kind of things.
You know, and that's one of the things that we do. You know, when you report a claim here, you know, we're going to immediately look at where were you located when the equipment was stolen. We'll put out fillers for equipment dealers because, you know, if a person is unaware of really what they have, they can take a tremble to a Leica store, you know, or whatever. We put out fillers that way, but we'll make contact with the department. We will actually go a step further to kind of chase that. So, like, if you've filed a missing or a stolen piece of equipment in the police department, we'll follow up a week later. We'll follow up, 2 weeks later, until we we really kind of have a feel for, okay, maybe that equipment's not going to be coming back, you know, kind of thing. So we will do that. This particular case, it was actually recovered 3 weeks later. And so then we have to go a step beyond that. And for that same insured, he's back up and running and working, but we recover the equipment. So from our perspective here at the agency, we go back and we chase that with the insurance carrier to say, okay, we have now recovered this equipment. If we can sell it off and recover, you know, $20,000, $15,000 for it to offset that person's loss, loss history.
And so, is it safe to assume that as the owner of the equipment or somebody who has suffered the loss, you can't take for granted that your carrier is going to follow up?
No, they won't.
Okay.
You can rest assured they're not going to follow up. They're going to, they don't really even know what they have with respect to the equipment to even know what how to follow up on it. So, you know, chances are the carrier themselves, if it's a stolen situation, they're not going to be checking eBay or Craigslist or anything like that. They're going to, if it shows up, they're going to it's going to be compensated back. But they're not going to know where to chase that equipment. It kind of goes back to, you know, the history here that we have with the surveyors to know really how we've recovered equipment in the past and to kind of chase those same avenues again in the future. But just so, you know, people are aware that, you know, if you have a situation occurred, you know, as quick as possible, get it reported and report it to your agency, no matter whom they are, basically at the same time, if not before, the police department, because sometimes we can get it tracked down before you even have an opportunity to report it with the police department. So, you know, jump on that as quickly as possible. So that's pretty much the only thing that I would say that's, you know, I wouldn't say it's new, but one thing to be aware of in the past couple of months, naturally in our busy seasons, to be aware of that, those thefts that's occurring out there. The other ones naturally is you know, having equipment hit by cars while we're out there working. So be sensitive to that as well. But I know
sense.
On our last show we had been visiting on flood insurance and professional liability insurance.
That makes a perfect segue for our first break. We're right at it here.
Great.
So in about 7 seconds or so, we'll go to break, and then we'll come back and pick up on that flood insurance because that is where we left off before.
Wonderful.
Let's do the break.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, for our second segment today with Lisa Isom. We talked about equipment theft and loss history in the first segment, and it was good to catch up on some of that information and see what's happening currently. And as we talked about just before break, the last time Lisa was with us, we began to talk about flood insurance issues, and we didn't get too deeply into that discussion because we've been talking about other things. So maybe we could pick up sort of where we left off, Lisa.
Yep. Well, you know, we did, you know, we had been speaking about the flood insurance, and I know at the last show, you know, I kind of readdressed a couple of items that had come in since the previous show on professional liability as well. And so to kind of revisit that a little bit, there was a question on the professional liability that had come in with respects to a retro date and or prior acts. And if I may, one of the listeners had come in and asked the question with respects to his own operation that he had never carried professional liability in the past. And I had mentioned on the radio show that, you know, you need to pick up prior acts on your claims made policy. And that is exactly correct. You do if you can. Now, one of the things that I'd like to visit on, it says, you know, his question was, can I purchase prior acts when I have not carried the coverage in the past? And then also, what are the reasons behind not being able to pick up or purchase coverage for the past? What I would say for clarification, if you've had, you know, every situation is different, but if you've had coverage in the past and say, for example, you've carried it for 10 years, you know, the economy kind of tanked and you decided, okay, I've either lowered my coverage and or dropped it because of the economy, and then now you're 2 years down the road and deciding, okay, I want to pick it back up again. That is a situation that may be explanatory to an insurance underwriter that you can show proof that you've had the coverage in place in the past, and you may get a carrier to allow for an additional pricing to pick up that 2 years that you've had without coverage, a lapse in your claims made policy. Most of the situations aren't going to be that way. If you've had coverage in the past and you can prove that you haven't had any work or lack thereof of work, you may be capable of speaking with your agent and negotiating a policy to pick up with a retroactive date going back to the first time you've had coverage. That will be an exception. It's certainly not the rule. So what I would tell you, in a situation where you have been in place, in business, say, for 5 years, and you have never carried professional liability, and now you're up against maybe a contract that's come to play, and you want to pick up a policy, in that situation, it's typically from that date forward that your retro date will start from that date forward, and that will then become your retroactive date. Now, when you come in and want to get a policy starting today, but you want to pick up for the past 5 years, from a insurance carrier's perspective, they're saying, what are you aware of that we don't know about? Why are you now wanting to pick up a policy and ask for the past 5 years when you didn't carry it in the past? They're going to be you know, a lot of questions that's going to be questioned of you in order to even go back to an underwriter. I would tell you it is there, again, it's going to be an exception if that carrier will allow you to pick up a retroactive date when you've never carried it in the past. So, you know, there are a couple of carriers that I'm aware of that from time to time, if you pick up a policy today, you've been in business for 5 years, you pick up a policy today, and the retroactive starts today going for a period of a year. So you have 12 months under your belt without a claim occurring. There are a couple of carriers I'm aware of that will, at that point, a year from now, they would then say, since we haven't had any claims that have occurred, we will allow you to go retro back to that 5 years. And so the explanation here is that if a claim occurs, then they will not pick up a retro going backward. If a claim does not occur, there could be a possibility of picking up those 5 years going back. And the underwriter's philosophy, if you will, is that they're concerned that something has maybe been spoken about or you have doubt about that has occurred on a job site that may develop in a claim, and that's the reason for that 12-month waiting period.
So would they want to, in that case, even just for the conversation, whether or not they agree to do it, I'm going to assume they're going to want some pretty decent information from you, records on things you've done and what that liability might be, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. People sometimes get frustrated because they're going to be asked, you know, a lot more, you know, questions or underwriting information. So that's exactly the case, is what type of work have you done in the past, you know, 5 years? Are those jobs completed? Has building, you know, like if it's a construction, staking job, they're going to come back and say, has construction begun? And, you know, just various things like that to where they get a better feel for maybe the if there has been an error that it's been, you know, discovered by this point in time and so forth. You are going to have, you know, other questions that's being asked from that perspective, and naturally you would be charged an additional premium typically for that retroactive date as well.
Yeah, I guess so. They would probably want to know if you had been in situations that might have resulted in a claim but somehow got worked out a different way, or there are all kinds of scenarios where, you know, things happen. You were talking about construction in particular. There's all kinds of things that happen on construction where something occurs, and, of course, the first thing everybody does is point fingers at everybody else. But eventually whatever is there may get worked out. But that I can see from an insurance company's perspective, if those kind of things are in the history, then they would probably want to know about that.
Yeah. Well, you know as well as I do, you know, sometimes, you know, depending on the job, you know, you may have a situation where you understand that you made an error and you go out and you rectify it and you fix it, you redo it. You know, naturally, something like that occurs. I would say 90% of the time, we're not going to know about that.
Right.
You know, and quite frankly, I don't want to know about that. But because those things, that's part of the course of doing business, I feel. But at the end of the day, you know, it really comes down to, in our world of professional liability today, there's so much, you know, mitigation, litigation, negotiation, if you will, that they're really looking at it from a professional aspect. So, you know, if you tell me, you know, just up front, listen, I started my business, You know, the first thing I needed was to get my general liability put in place, and I needed to, you know, have my auto insured and yada, yada. And I got this work and that work, and I was only doing $20,000, and then I did $50,000, and then now I'm doing $100,000. And, you know, 3 years got under my belt, and I just literally couldn't afford to carry the professional liability. That's much more of a explainable reasoning than to say I started it and I just didn't want to carry it because I never thought I would ever be brought into a suit in today's world. Because today you don't have to do anything. You can just, you know, wake up in the morning and get sued. And so from most of the insurance carriers out there today, they're really more in tune to the professional, the entire professional aspect. So, the way you professionally do your business, the way you run your business, the risk management that you put in place to operate your business, and then naturally that carries down to the mitigation of claims. So, from my perspective, for me to go back to a carrier to say, okay, you know, they've gotten 5 years under their belt and now they really want to put together and they want to, you know, put a business plan in place, and they've put together this risk management tool, and naturally part of that is we're requiring that they're carrying professional liability. They're more inclined for me to pick up that account and negotiate a retro after a year under our belt than they would be for a person that just never really thought about putting professional liability in place. So.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, having you said that, and we got maybe a minute and a half or so before our next break, but having had you say that, it's probably a good time to remind our listeners that the program that you guys operate for us is one in which you are our advocate. You're not the insurance company.
And that's correct.
Sometimes I think people misunderstand that, you know, that your company is an insurance company and you're not. You're an advocate for people like us, and you've chosen surveyors as your primary client base.
Absolutely. Right before break, what I would tell you is, if you want to call me and bounce something, an idea past me, or I have this situation, what would you suggest? I'd be more than happy to tell you anything that I know from an insurance perspective. That's what I'm here for, and that's my job for NSPS.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why that didn't register to me before, and I guess I just took it for granted that everybody would understand that. But then as you were talking, I thought, well, maybe people don't recognize that, because you were talking about you would go to the insurance company and have that conversation. And then
right.
I thought, well, maybe I should explain to people exactly what it is that the member benefit that is provided through our relationship with you guys is that of an advocate. And
absolutely.
And that's the important thing, and going to bat for the surveyor, and, of course, then having all the experience in dealing with surveying issues. So want to make sure we got that in before we go into this next break here in 10 seconds or so.
Yeah. Well, I may not have all of the answers, but I think I can go and find the answers that may be needed for whatever their questions may be.
Good. Well, let's go to that break. We'll be right back.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Hi, I'm Ray Bowman, hoping you'll join us each Friday at noon for our new show, Food and Farm, brought to you by FeedstuffsFoodLink.com, only on America's Web Radio.
Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Learn, connect, share. Join us every Friday at 11 o'clock to learn all those confusing issues around healthcare, Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid. We'll help you find the answers, help you stay in compliance. Join us Friday at 11 o'clock.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
As our regular listeners know, this is the time of the show where we have our Parker Davis Quick Stakes contest, where we ask a question of our guest, and whatever answer that guest gives us, the first person to respond to Quick Stakes Contest at AmericasWebRadio.com will be the winner for the day. So we try to make our answers fairly short one. So, Lisa, the question for today is, following up on our conversation just before the break, what role does Assurance Risk Managers play for NSPS members as a member benefit?
Well, you know, I think one of the most important things is an advocate for the NSPS member.
And that's what we're looking for. The role is that of advocate, and that's so important for us to remember as a collaborator, somebody who works with you to help you work through the things that we don't know about. You know, we surveyors always like to tell people they don't understand what we do, so they needed to talk to us about how to do it. Well, we fall into that same category in other areas, so we have to depend on professionals and experts to help us as well. So, and we're
Absolutely. Very
glad to have you doing that. Well, I know as we started that segment, and it was important for us to talk about that, because one of the things I always like to do when you're on the show is follow up with questions you've gotten from the previous show, so that was a really good one. But I know the other thing we began to talk about before was obviously the flood insurance side of things.
Flood insurance, yeah. You know, and on the flood insurance, you know, those are things that have developed over the past couple of months as well. And, you know, one of the things that I would tell you is within the NSPS insurance program, naturally, and the whole purpose of these shows is to basically provide some education, education of what you don't know that you don't know. So at the end of the day, you know, flood insurance, you know, we're across the country, you have so many different variations of what the weather is doing this, you know, during the year. And so, you know, you have the floods, you have the fires, and so forth. At the end of the day, flood insurance is so important, and you don't realize how important until you have a claim that's basically uncovered. So, again, just to reiterate on the flood insurance that we've spoken in the past about, you know, flood insurance typically will need to be put in place 30 days before a claim would occur. However, flood insurance is certainly not one that is for just the person that is on a river or near a lake, you know, close to a stream or in a floodplain. It is one that most all of us need. And what I would tell you is, years ago, homeowners insurance to business insurance would typically cover some form of backup or some form of flood that would come into an all-risk policy. That does not exist today. So in today's world, if you do not have flood insurance, you don't have that coverage should something like that occur. And so what I would tell you, most claims occur in low-risk flood zone. They occur in burn areas. So you're, you know, in the midst of a fire drought situation, and you think the last thing I need on the face of the earth is flood insurance. You're up on top of a mountain or on the side of a hill, and you're looking down on a beautiful valley of water or whatever it may be. You know, the last thing you're thinking about is flood insurance. But the business insurance and homeowners insurance, again, does not cover flood. So if I may, just to run through a couple of scenarios that's occurred in the past 30 days, you have, you know, these rainstorms that come through, and you may have, you know, 2 inches of rain that occurs in, you know, 30 minutes. And your downspout of a home or a business has malfunctioned, and maybe it's running where the water finds its way into your window well. The window well basically won't hold the water, and so it comes into your home. That's considered flood. You have a, this is a real-life situation. I have a surveying company with a beautiful landscape and sets on a side of a little incline. It's not even much of a hill, actually. And the neighbor next door, basically their water comes trailing down the side of this little hill, this little incline. It basically came in, found its way with a little rainstorm that went through, and came in to one of the sliding doors, and basically came into the place, fried a lot of their batteries that they had sitting on the ground, plugged in overnight. All of the damage that was caused from that, including that type of water damage, you know, whether it's, you know, drying for mold or spraying for mold or ripping out the drywall and repairing that, that was all considered flood. And there was no, you know, there was no creek, there's no nothing. And basically, at the end of the day, you know, our infrastructure today, we live in a lot of areas, we're living in, you know, some concrete worlds. And, you know, these rainstorms that come through after, you know, just a little summer afternoon rainstorm can cause severe damage to your property, and you're not going to have the coverage to repair it. So in that situation, it was a good $18,000 of just the repair of the first floor surveying company, and they did not have flood insurance.
That's actually true for home and business.
Everything, yes.
You were talking about instances. I'll tell you a quick little story. A really good friend of mine who has a home on one of the highest mountains in North Georgia, not anywhere near a stream. I mean, we're talking way up on the side of the mountain. And they spend time there, and they have a home in another place, and they had left, and it was one of those really rainy periods a couple of years ago, and water came into the side of their house and leaked down into a theater that they had built underneath the house, a big theater. And while they were gone, because they spent a lot of time away, it actually molded.
Yep.
And I think it ended up costing them, I don't know, $30,000 or $40,000 or something like that.
Yes.
And those are the kind of things that happen. And just another indication that making your point, flood does not have to mean you're sitting by a body of water somewhere.
No, absolutely not. And you know, just 2 weeks ago, homeowner situation, and the person, a squirrel, had basically built a nest in the drain that was draining outside of a person's window well. And so, you know, they had put all of the stuff together, you know, the downspout and all of that good stuff was working just fine until, you know, mother squirrel finds her way into this drain. And the water, you know, within a mile and a half, I think they said that there was a 3-inch rain occurred. It was just a sudden downpour. And this particular person sits there, you know, they're trying to put towels and everything else up, and it was a finished basement. And basically they couldn't stop it. It, you know, it was coming in, you know, too quickly, couldn't stop it. And same situation, you know, they had just remodeled the basement and put in, you know, nice flooring and furniture and so on and so forth, but they had moved around and had boxes sitting in the floor. So naturally all of that was, you know, was damaged as well as their walls and everything else. So it is, it's, you know, those freaky things. And quite frankly, one of the things I would tell you, it's the first thing that people think about is, I can't afford, you know, the flood insurance. If you're in one of the, you know, the moderate, low-risk areas, it is the so inexpensive you couldn't even imagine.
I mean, is that something that can be tied in with your homeowners, or do you buy it separately?
You know, it depending on who you're insured with, they may or may not provide homeowners or flood insurance as part of the homeowners policy. But you can certainly acquire flood insurance individually, separate from your homeowners. And I would tell you 90% of the people that do flood insurance, that's the way you're going to do it, is individually. There's Farmers, I believe, has in some areas they will do flood insurance along with the home. One thing that I will tell you is oftentimes if you're in a low risk, you'd be surprised at how many people try to tell you not to carry flood insurance because you're in a low risk. So it's like the mentality is you're kind of prone to push it to the people that really need it, which are, I mean, really need it, like a mortgage company requiring you to carry it because you're in a flood zone. But as an example, if you would insure a low risk or low to moderate risk area, you're probably looking at maybe $150 to $200, depending on your value, for flood insurance.
Wow.
And that's per year. It's not like a per month situation. Yeah. So naturally, if you have a sink drain that plugs up and you don't have you know, flood insurance, that could cause, you know, an uncovered loss. A sump pump that malfunctions. Here's a real-life Lisa situation. You know, a hot water heater, we're on a well, and we have our pump inside the house. And so the pump malfunctioned, and one of the I forget what little gauge thing it is, but it was a water spout that basically blew out, and it was, you know, this humongous pressure blowing into our home. That is certainly a flood. So we had about 3 inches of water floating around in our basement, and that was, if I didn't have flood insurance, it would not have been covered. So those kind of things occur on everybody's day-to-day life. And so I wanted to kind of go over that with everyone as a reminder. Naturally, we can write flood insurance nationwide for the NSPS member, but most importantly, just to make it everyone aware that, you know, just make sure that you have it. If you don't get a quote, at least you can you can see what that cost would be to you. And
that takes us to our last break.
Good.
So
all
we'll
right.
be back shortly.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schurz, as we talk about the topics that doctors talk about amongst themselves, such as Medicare, Obamacare, alternative forms of care, and health information technology. Join us every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And welcome back, everyone, to our final segment today with Lisa Isom, and we're going to have conversation about another topic and maybe lead into our next show. We're trying to cover as much as we can. And thank you so much, Lisa, for going over all the things we've talked about today, whether it's the theft issue and the loss history item, the professional liability side that you talked about earlier, and then obviously the flood insurance. That was very, very enlightening. I'm sure it was. I know it was to me. I'm sure it was to everybody else as well.
Good.
But I know you wanted to talk about some umbrella coverage and get started into that, and then we'll maybe talk about it more next time.
Absolutely. One of the things, you know, I wanted to do, especially with the radio shows, is kind of cover most all of the business insurance, and then we can certainly go into the personal lines insurance as well. But, you know, we've spoken about the general liability, the auto, the workers' comp, and then into the flood and the professional. The last thing I was wanting to talk about, and these are the primary basics of coverage for a business. But one of the things that we will kind of discuss here today is umbrella. Some people will call it an umbrella policy. Others will call it an excess policy. And to provide a little bit of distinction between the two, an umbrella policy is just that. It will provide an umbrella over all of the coverage it is protecting or setting over top of. So if you can envision an umbrella setting over the top of something to give you that additional protection. Whereas an excess policy sets above a certain limit. So what I would tell you is typically a true umbrella policy is much broader than just an excess policy that would give you an excess of $1,000 or $1 million on top of your general liability, or an excess of $1 million over top of your auto. So it's a little bit broader than it would be than an excess policy.
So just out of curiosity, Lisa, if I were talking to somebody getting advice about umbrella versus excess, what would be the logic for someone to say, well, why don't you get excess instead of umbrella? I mean, it sounds to me like from what you're saying, umbrella is better. I guess I was just curious about under what circumstance might somebody say, well, you only need this.
Yeah. Typically, excess is offered when it's in conjunction with your existing policy. So as an example, you may have a general liability with a carrier, and they also provide an excess policy over that same general liability policy. It's typically going to be a little bit less expensive, not always, but a little bit. But they're only basically trying to protect just that general liability policy and provide you $1 million over that, rather than a full umbrella policy over all of your portfolio as a business.
Okay, I see.
Okay, but so sometimes it could be the cost advantage, but most of the time it's going to be pretty comparable. You just have to an umbrella policy, a true umbrella, will be typically separate and written with a oftentimes a separate company. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, as a basic, you have your general liability, you have your auto liability, and you have your employer's liability, which is part of your workers' comp. Okay? Normal access umbrellas, umbrella and or access sets above those three policies. And as a rule of thumb, make sure when you're getting any form of an excess or a umbrella that you're asking that they set above all three. Because sometimes what we run into is a person will have a general liability policy for $1 million, $2 million, then they will have an umbrella for $1 million, but it only sets above the general liability. So these three coverages are considered, is a word that's called underlying coverage. So it's underlying limits that this umbrella sets above. So your premium oftentimes would be the same. It's just a matter of saying, I want to make sure that any exposure I have beneath me, so from a liability perspective, general liability, auto liability, or workers' comp, this umbrella is providing me an extended layer, an excess layer of coverage of $1 million. So if I have a general liability policy that I have caused property damage or bodily injury to someone, I have this as a cushion. If I have an auto accident, I have this as a cushion. If I have a severe workers' comp employer's liability situation, I have this as a cushion. So one of the things that you want to make sure of when you have an umbrella, you have the umbrella or excess policy, it does set above all your underlying limits. Now, what I will say is an umbrella is typically the overlooked coverage that oftentimes you don't even ask for. Sometimes you don't even have presented to you, but the most cost-effective of all of your coverages. So an umbrella is typically, and especially for a surveyor, where you're going to see an umbrella possibly extended to is oftentimes under your auto liability. General liability for a surveyor are very, very few and far between claims. But an auto liability, we all know, an auto accident can extend into your umbrella very quickly. An example of cost for an umbrella for a surveyor, you're probably looking at maybe $350 to $500 for $1 million. And as you extend that those millions, so from $1 million to, say, $5 million, you're probably looking at an additional $350. So it's very cost-effective to provide yourself that additional layer of umbrella. Okay. Oftentimes, contracts will ask for you to carry $2 million or $3 million on general liability, sometimes $2 million on an auto. The only way you're going to get a $2 million auto limit is to carry an umbrella. On a business policy, it's typically a max is $1 million, and then you carry an umbrella for it. That's usually when you come back and ask for an umbrella. Is when you're required by contract. My point here today is to look at it from your own business perspective, and from a cost perspective, it is very inexpensive for you to carry a $1 million umbrella to provide yourself some protection there. An umbrella policy does not sit on top of any type of professional liability exposure. You can get an excess policy that would be just for professional liability policies. So as an example, if you have a professional and you need by contract to carry $3 million in lieu of $1 million, you can get an excess specific to the professional for an extended $2 million limit that will then, in essence, give you your $3 million.
Is that something you would do on a
situational basis. I mean, if you knew you were coming into a situation, it wouldn't be something. I mean, you could do it. You it wouldn't be something you had to have. And say some big project comes up, you could then go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I would tell you it's typically done on a job specific basis to extend that that $1 million limit. Now, one piece of advice, we were talking about Lisa being the advocate. One thing that I would tell you is you don't go out and advertise how much life insurance you have. Okay? So from my suggestion, just as a rule of thumb, we don't actually put on an umbrella unless you ask for it or if you're required by contract to have it on your certificate of insurance. I would tell you as a rule of thumb, I wouldn't suggest that you put your umbrella on your certificates because you don't really want to go out there and advertise that you have this out there as a cushion. But at the end of the day, you have life insurance, you have your umbrella. So you have that from a need-by basis. If you need it, it's there, but you don't have to go out and advertise that you got it. But at the end of the day, you know, your certificates, and to that point, your certificates are at your request. So if you don't want to put professional liability on every single certificate, make sure you tell your agent or whomever you're requesting it from, I don't want, you know, my professional shown on that, nor do I want my umbrella shown on that. Give them what they've asked for. So if they're asking to see a certificate for general liability in your auto, provide them the general liability in their auto. That's just a little bit of a speed bump from your perspective, because when someone's named in a suit and you're on a job site, they're going to pull every certificate that of anyone that's on that job site. So what you're doing is providing a little bit of free advice to someone's attorneys that are looking at that that course of action that they're going to do on that particular.
Looking for where the dollars might come from.
That's what I was wanting to say, but I thought I better not.
Yeah, well, I can say it because I'm not the advisor.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, your umbrella, your business umbrella certainly provides you that extra protection. And, you know, you can do this from your business and, you know, and the same thing applies only to your personal as well. So moving on to the personal.
We have about a minute left, so as you're going into that,
okay.
It's going fast. But thanks again for being with me today, if we don't have time at the end. But.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I do appreciate it. We are, you know, going into our next series for the next radio show will be, and we can certainly start on personal lines insurance. I will, you know, speak briefly on the personal umbrella. Both from a personal umbrella perspective as well as the business perspective, you can have an umbrella that will set above uninsured and underinsured liability, and that is going to be an extreme point that I want to cover in detail at our next show to give you a little bit of a tease there. But not necessarily is this related to the uninsured, underinsured motorist that so many people hear about on your personal autos.
Right.
This is uninsured, underinsured liability as a whole.
I hate to break us off, but we're going to have to go.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Lisa, for being with me, and we'll pick this up next time.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks again.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.